Welcome to episode 32 of the Fredcast for the week of September the 4th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, race results from the Tour of Spain, the Tour of Britain, and the USA Championships. I'll have an update on the condition of racer Christoph Brandt and on the police charity ride, as well as an update on a cancer survivor's ride across the United States. And it's Opera Singer 1, Squirrel 0. Following the news, I'll have a personal appeal, listener mail, upcoming rides, shoutouts, and of course, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to the Fredcast, and before we get started, just a couple of things I want to mention, and the first is something I haven't mentioned in a long time, and I think it's well overdue. I want to talk to you about the great music you're hearing in the background that starts out every Fredcast. The music is by a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Bratcher. The song is called Happy. Every week I've got links in the show notes to Jimmy's website, and now I've got a link in the show notes to the iTunes Music Store where you can go and buy some of Jimmy's music. So let's support the people who support podcasting, and if you like Jimmy's music, go on iTunes and buy his song. I make nothing out of the deal except for the fact that I enjoy his music, and if you do too, I hope that you'll consider supporting him. So thanks a lot for doing that. Again, links are in the show notes. Now, another thing I want to mention is something I mentioned in last week's show, but it bears repeating, and that is that I've noticed that when I put more than one show into the feed per week, that a lot of you listeners, more than half of you, only get one of those shows, and it has something to do with the settings in your podcatching client. I don't know about other podcatching clients, but the majority of you are using iTunes, and there's a very simple setting that I went over in show number 31 about how you can set iTunes to make sure that you get every episode, not just the most recent. So go back in show 31. If you think you've missed some shows, make sure you set up iTunes properly and go in there and make sure you go back and get the shows that you missed, because you never know what you've missed here on the Fredcast. Speaking of what you could miss, you'll remember that about 2 weeks ago, I inserted a new show into the feed, and it's called The Spokesman Cycling Podcast. Well, episode 2 is now out, and although I'm not inserting into the feed, you can go and get it. Several ways that you can do it. You can go to the website, and that's at the-spokesmen.com. There's links in the show notes. And of course, you can always go to iTunes, search for The Spokesman Cycling Podcast, and download the most recent episode. We had a lot of people on the roundtable this week, and we had some very lively discussion about some new products and a bunch of other things. So go ahead and take a look at that. Find it in iTunes as well as in the show notes. I also have another new podcast, and this is the official MS-150 podcast, and this is the podcast of the MS-150 Beta Bay Bike Tour that takes place October 7th and 8th here in sunny Southern California. It's something I'm very involved in and something you're going to hear about a little bit later after the news. I do have a podcast for that show. We just released our second podcast. You can get that by going to ms150betabay.com. There's a link in the show notes, or of course, go to iTunes, search for MS-150. It is the first official MS-150 podcast out of all the 100 plus MS-150s around the country. So go ahead and check it out. Hope you enjoy it. And let's get on with the news. Well, the last of the three annual Grand Tours, the Vuelta a España, or the Tour of Spain, continues to roll through the Iberian Peninsula this week. When we last met here on the Fredcast, the entire race had been turned upside down as the peloton hit the mountains on stage 5. You'll remember that up until that point, the race had belonged to the sprinters, with Tor Husovt leading. But as predicted, stage 5 ushered in a new leader in Danilo De Luca of Italy. By the end of that stage, Husovt had moved from first place in the general classification all the way down to 109th overall. In stage 6, Husovt came charging back, winning the 177-kilometer stage while De Luca maintained his lead atop the general classification. Stage 7 took place last Friday, and it was a 154-kilometer event with a mountaintop finish following a first-category climb. The stage was won by Spain's Alejandro Valverde, who attacked with just 1 kilometer left in the stage to win 4 seconds ahead of second and third place finishers and fellow Spaniards Carlos Sastre and José Ángel Gómez Marchante. Fourth place went to Discovery's Janic Brockovic of Slovenia, who took over the overall lead in the race. Stage 8 was on Saturday, and it saw Alexander Vinokourov win his first ever Vuelta stage. This was a 173-kilometer race from Ponferrada to Lugo. This is a sweet victory for the Kazakh rider from the Astana team, since his whole team was banned from participation in the Tour de France after too many of his team's riders were mistakenly implicated in the Operación Puerto doping scandal. To win the stage, Vino outsprinted the usual suspects like Tor Husoft in the final 300 meters of the event, but there was little change in the overall leaders. Now, perhaps to put a little bit more icing on the cake, Vino went on to win Sunday's ninth stage, 16 seconds ahead of home country favorite Alejandro Valverde, with fellow Kazakh Andrey Kazechkin in third place. After that stage, Alejandro Valverde was in first place in the general classification, with a 27-second lead over Kazechkin and Carlos Sastre in third. Now, Vino was in fifth place behind José Ángel Gómez Marchante. Monday was a rest day, and the riders returned to racing on Tuesday for the 199-kilometer Stage 10, and this was the third stage in a row that was won by a Team Astana rider, with Portugal's Sergio Paulino winning after breaking away from a group of 15 riders in the final kilometer of the stage. After that stage, race leader Alejandro Valverde retained his 27-second advantage over Andrey Kazechkin of Kazakhstan. Now, today's Stage 11 was 173 kilometers and saw another Discovery Channel win when Igoi Martinez from Spain won the stage nearly a full minute ahead of a second-place finisher, Inigo Landaluze, and third-place Volodymyr Gustav of Team CSC. So at the end of 11 stages, this is how the general classification stacks up. In first place, Alejandro Valverde from Spain and Cas d'Epargne. Second, Andrey Kazechkin from Astana, 27 seconds behind. Third, Carlos Sastre from Spain and Team CSC, 44 seconds behind. Fourth place, José Ángel Gómez Marchante from Spain and Sonier Duval, 56 seconds behind. And in fifth place, there's Alexandro Vinokourov from Kazakhstan and Team Astana, 1 minute and 38 seconds behind the leader, Alejandro Valverde. Now, also, one final note until next week. As you know, Denis Menchov is the reigning champion in the Vuelta a España, and he became the champion not by having the absolute best time in last year's race, but by having the second best time, because as you'll recall, race winner Roberto Heras was stripped of his title after he was testing positive for blood doping, and he was using EPO, according to officials. Well, unfortunately, Menchov had to pull out of the race after today's Stage 11 because he had some stomach problems. So, of course, we wish him the best, and, of course, I'm sorry to see him go, because it would have been great to see him maybe do a little bit better this year and maybe retain his championship crown. But it's not to be. There'll be more on the Vuelta a España in next week's Fredcast. And of course, something that I've mentioned here before, and of course, I don't get anything out of it except for the fact that I think they have a great website and they provide a great service. Cycling.tv does have a live feed of the Vuelta every single day live. It is an extra paid service of cycling.tv, but at least here in the United States, it's the only way you're going to get live coverage of this amazing event. So cycling.tv is a great place to go, and I wholeheartedly recommend it to everyone. And while the Vuelta gets all of the attention, we can't forget that many Pro Tour riders didn't head to Spain this month, but instead they went over to the UK for the Tour of Britain. The Tour of Britain is a 6-stage event that began last Tuesday, August 29th, in Glasgow, Scotland. And from there, the tour wound through the Northwest, Yorkshire, and the West Midlands before a brand new 5th stage in the Southeast, ending in Canterbury. And of course, the reason I mention that is because that's going to be the finish city of the first stage of the 2007 Tour de France. More on that later. The race ended this past weekend with a circuit race in the streets of London not far from Buckingham Palace. The final stage was won by world champion Tom Bonin after 20 laps around some of the most well-known landmarks and some of the most well-known streets in central London. But the overall winner of the event was Martin Pedersen from Norway and Team CSC. This was a great victory for Pedersen, who led the entire event from day one after he won the first stage. This is the first professional win for Pedersen and a welcome victory for Team CSC, especially since Pedersen's teammate Andy Schleck won the race's King of the Mountains jersey. Final classification in this year's Tour of Britain, of course, first place, Martin Pedersen. Second place, Luis Pasamontes from Spain and the Unibet team, 51 seconds behind Pedersen. Third place, here's a familiar name, Filippo Pozzato from Italy and the Quickstep team, 2 minutes and 11 seconds back. Fourth, Nick Nuyens from Belgium and the Quickstep team, 2 minutes and 46 seconds back. And rounding out the top five, Michael Rogers, another name that we well know from T-Mobile, 2 minutes and 46 seconds back. Now, something that came up and something that we've discussed here on the Fredcast before, England is going to host the opening two stages of the 2007 Tour de France. So this year's Tour of Britain was a bit of a test for English organizers, a dry run, if you will. And unfortunately, things didn't go as well as they would have liked. Throughout the race, there were problems with the way in which roads were closed, the way in which riders were led around by race marshals, and there were some accidents as well. In one stage, riders complained that the rolling roadblocks that the police officers were using, that they weren't effective, that they were letting traffic onto the course, causing a potential hazard to the racers. In another stage, racers were actually led down the wrong road, and this led to a major delay in that day's racing. In fact, the peloton held what they call a go-slow protest as a result of all the problems on Saturday. And then, of course, to add insult to injury, on Sunday, as they're going around the circuit racing in London, there was a police motorbike that collided with a race marshal's bike, causing the two to careen into crowd barriers, causing not only a potential hazard to racers, but, of course, to the over 1 million spectators who would come out to watch. According to what I've read, the race organizers are also supposed to be involved in the planning for the two UK stages of the Tour de France next year. So it looks to me like there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and that they're certainly going to have to raise the confidence and of the racers of the peloton, as well as the Tour de France organizers, and they're really going to have to do their planning much, much better, because when it comes to the Tour de France, you're talking about a larger group of racers, and you're also talking about a larger group of spectators, and therefore the potential danger is even higher. So hopefully they will learn from the errors that they made in this year's Tour of Britain, and that when the Tour de France rolls onto the shores of the UK next summer, things will be much, much better organized. Meanwhile, here in the United States, we've just completed the USA Cycling Professional Championship races, which were held in Greenville, South Carolina. Saturday was the individual time trial event, a 20.15-mile course in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. The race and the USA Championship was won by Utah's own Dave Zabriskie, who covered the course in 41 minutes, 49 seconds, just 32 seconds faster than second place finisher Chris Baldwin of Boulder, Colorado. Now, Baldwin actually crashed in a turn during the race, so there's really no telling who might have actually ended up in the Stars and Stripes if the crash hadn't occurred. Of course, you'll recall that Dave Zabriskie crashed in a team time trial on last year's Tour de France, so it just goes to show you how easily and quickly your fortunes can change in the world of bicycle racing. Third place went to Jason McCartney of Coralville, Iowa, and he was 52 seconds slower than Dave Zabriskie. Now, on Sunday, they held the main event of the weekend, the 121-mile road race. This event included some of the most well-known names in professional cycling in the United States, including George Hincapie and Levi Leipheimer. In all, 103 racers started the event, and interestingly, this was the first time in 21 years that it was actually an all-American event, and that it was actually held in a city other than Philadelphia. See, in the past, this was an international race. You had racers from all over the world, but the Stars and Stripes jersey was awarded to the first American to cross the finish line. Considering the fact that American cyclists have definitely come into their own and are at the top of their game, the top of the world when it comes to cycling, USA Cycling decided to finally make this an all-American event. And this was a tough event because the 121 miles were made up of 22-mile circuits to the top of Paris Mountain and back. And the climb to the top of the Paris Mountain is 2.2 miles. According to George Hincapie, it became what he called a race of attrition. Now, as they headed up the final ascent of Paris Mountain, it was a group of three that included Leipheimer, Hincapie, and Andrew Bajadali of Boulder, Colorado. Hincapie and Leipheimer battled as the peloton headed back into Greenville for a few laps around town, but on the final lap, George attacked, and Levi just didn't have anything left. Hincapie won the Stars and Stripes jersey, Leipheimer took second, and Danny Pate took third. It's kind of an interesting finish when you think about it, because George, of course, has been Lance's teammate for so long, first on U.S. Postal and then on Discovery, and now Levi Leipheimer will be joining George in 2007 on the Discovery Channel team. So you've got, at least according to the results of this race, the two top Americans in their field will be on the same team next year, and I think that certainly is a possible predictor of the possible success that we might see for Team Discovery in 2007. One of the things I don't like to do here on the Fredcast is sort of leave you hanging and leaving you with questions, especially when it comes to the health of a rider when there's been an accident. And you know that I told you about Belgian rider Christophe Brandt, who suffered multiple injuries in a very high-speed crash in the Sels to Merksem race. And he had broken bones, and he had kidney damage, and the doctors put him into a medically induced coma in order to help his body repair itself. And they were planning on leaving him in the coma for a number of days, but instead they decided to bring him out of the coma once they saw an improvement in his vital signs and in his overall condition. The great thing, the good news to report, is that the reports that I've seen say that he's awake, he's talking with people, he's talking with his wife, and there's just been a very, very big improvement. Now, he had to have one of his kidneys actually removed, but as I told you in the last show, the doctors were able to save his spleen. He had had a broken arm, four shattered ribs, and a collapsed lung. The good news is that it looks like he should be able to make a full recovery, and the doctors have said that there really is no problem with him racing with only one kidney. So this is really good news for Christophe Brandt, and hoping to see him back on the tour come 2007. While we're on the subject of former Lance Armstrong teammates, there's just more bad news for Tyler Hamilton. Tyler Hamilton's suspension for doping as a result of being caught using blood doping after the 2004 Vuelta a España, or the Tour of Spain, his suspension is due to end in really just a few days from now. And he had hoped that he would be able to participate in the upcoming World Championships in Austria. Well, according to reports on the web, it does not look good for Tyler participating in the World Championships, because USA Cycling, the officials have ruled out Tyler being able to be on the national team. According to an email that was on the VeloNews.com website from USA Cycling's Sean Petty, quote, "Tyler has not met any of the automatic selection criteria for Worlds, and per the selection procedures, he did not petition for a spot on the World Championship team. The petition deadline was August 11th, so he will not be a member of the U.S. World Championship team." In addition, the UCI has confirmed that Tyler will not be able to race for a Pro Tour team for another 2 years because, as we've talked about before, the UCI Pro Tour team's code of ethics states that riders who serve a 2-year ban are also banned from riding for a Pro Tour team for another 2 years. We talked about this when we talked about Floyd and his forthcoming suspension, and the fact that if found guilty, he will end up with a 2-year suspension, and then because of this new code of ethics, another 2-year ban from a Pro Tour team. So it's effectively a 4-year suspension from the Pro Tour. It does not look good for Tyler also because, as we've talked about before, he has been implicated in the Operacion Puerto scandal, even though Tyler denies ever working with Eufemiano Fuentes, who is the central figure, the doctor who is central in the Puerto affair. So, sorry for Tyler. It does not look like he'll be in the Worlds this year, and it certainly doesn't look like he's going to be on a Pro Tour team. But if anything changes, I'll make sure to let you know. And across the pond, on the other side of the world, Jan Ullrich is having his own problems as a result of the Puerto affair. Jan had a contract with a German television network, ARD, and he was paid about 152 2,000 US per year for exclusive interviews, diaries, and a bunch of appearances in some of their shows on the ARD network. ARD has now terminated his contract. And in addition, a top German sports official has now asked Jan to do whatever he can to come clean about doping. And he's asked him to take a DNA test because they basically are saying, listen, this is a real problem for German cycling. It's a real problem for German sports. And we feel that if you go ahead and make this affirmative action, you're either going to confirm the fact that you were doping or you're going to categorically show that you were not doping. No response from Ulrich yet. I tend to doubt that he'll actually take this step. But it's interesting to see that almost the same time that he was fired for, you know, fairly high paying contract, that German officials are taking this tough stand. I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more from German officials and from other national cycling organizations who are simply fed up with all the doping in cycling. Well, here's an update on another story that I brought to you last week, and that was the story of the police officers who were taking part in the charity ride to raise money and awareness for other officers in Indiana, here in the United States, who had been downed in the line of duty. And you'll recall that there was a horrific and tragic accident that occurred where a motorist ran into the support van for the cyclists, and two of the police cyclists were killed and others were injured. As a result of the accident, they suspended the ride, and it looked like that was going to be it for the year. But, you know, almost in an act of healing and just to close a circle, a couple of days late, the other riders did complete the event, and I think that that just is great news. It was supposed to have taken place last Monday, but it had to be suspended after the two officers died, and they held the funerals for them, but they did finally do the ride, and congratulations to them for that. Of course, there is a link in the show notes again if you'd like more information on the organization or if you would like to send them some support. I'm sure that they would very, very much appreciate that. And another update, this one a little bit happier than the last. You remember several weeks ago I told you about cancer patient Jane Tomlinson, whose plan was to cycle across the United States to, again, raise awareness for cancer as well as to raise money for British and American charities working with cancer patients and children. Great news. On September the 2nd, Jane Tomlinson pedaled her bike into Battery Park in Lower Manhattan, completing a 6,720-kilometer ride across the United States. It was a 63-day ride. You'll recall it began at the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. She endured cold. She endured heat, dog attacks. She even had a run-in with police in Colorado. But the bottom line was that she was able to complete the ride. Congratulations to Jane. And this was just another of the amazing feats that she's accomplished since having been diagnosed with cancer and having been told that she had very, very short time to live. Now, in addition to completing this amazing feat, as you may recall, she is the first cancer patient to complete a full official triathlon and the first person to run a marathon while on chemotherapy. So congratulations to Jane. Again, there is a link in the show notes to her website where you can look at information, some memorabilia from the ride, and if you're interested in donating to any of those charities, there are links there as well. Well, I was kind of surprised that I didn't get an email from some of my Texas listeners on this next story. This one has to do with the city of Austin. For those of you that don't know, that's the capital of the state of Texas here in the United States. In the city of Austin last week, there was a raucous, loud, and very long city council meeting as they considered a proposed mandatory bicycle helmet ordinance. This ordinance would have made it mandatory not just for children to wear bicycle helmets, but also for adults as well. Now, personally, I wear my helmet every time I get on my bike, even if I'm just going down the block. But I'm not so sure how I feel about the government mandating that I wear my helmet. And I know a lot of motorcyclists here in California who are upset about the fact that the government makes them wear a helmet, whether they would or not. And plenty of motorists who feel the same way about seatbelt laws. Well, it turns out that you cyclists in Texas feel the same way, because this city council meeting was rocked by dozens, hundreds of cyclists who show up to fight this ordinance. Now, it was stopped, at least for the time being, but it looks like it was stopped on a technicality based on how the ordinance was listed on the city council agenda. So for those of you in Austin, I recommend that if this is something that you're interested in, that you keep an eye on your local newspapers and on your local TV news, because this could come up again. And if this is something that you are in favor of, or even something that you're against, you're going to want to go to the next city council meeting where it's going to be discussed, so that you can make sure that your voice is heard. And for all you Fredcast listeners in Texas, should this come up again, please let me know. It'd be something I'll be happy to talk about again here on the Fredcast anytime it comes up. And I'd love to hear your opinions on whether or not you think that cyclists should be forced by their government, city, state, federal, or otherwise, to wear a helmet every time they get on a bike. I'd be really curious to hear what you think. Send your emails to thefredcast@gmail.com. Okay, there's an event taking place this weekend that wouldn't necessarily go in our features section where we talk about rides that you can participate in, but it's one that definitely bears mentioning. Something that we've been talking about a lot here in the United States over the last few days and weeks, and something I think everybody around the world will be talking about over the next few days. Next Monday represents the 5th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks here in the United States. And there's a ride that's taking place every year in memory of those killed in the line of duty on 9/11. And it's called the Tour de Force Bicycle Ride. This year it's going to take place this coming Friday until Monday, September 11th, with 100 law enforcement officers from around the world pedaling from Ground Zero in New York, the former location of the World Trade Center towers, to the Pentagon in Washington, both of which, of course, were hit by terrorists who commandeered commercial airliners and turned them into weapons of mass destruction on September 11, 2001. Now, the event was created in 2002 to raise money for officers killed during the 9/11 terrorist attacks and their families. And, of course, family members of victims also are going to accompany the officers during the ride. So it is a very good event, and I think it's going to be a very interesting weekend as we see all the commemorations here in the United States of that dreadful day. If you'd like more information on this ride, I've put a link in the show notes so that you can click on it and check it out. So here's sort of a weird story, something that doesn't happen every day. A gentleman by the name of Esa Rutanen, who is a famous opera singer in Finland, was pedaling to work one day at the Helsinki Opera House last month. All of a sudden, a squirrel ran into his spokes, caused the opera singer to fall, knock himself out, and break his nose just before the world premiere of a new opera that he was planning on starring in. Now, according to a Finnish National Opera spokeswoman, he's not yet singing in rehearsals, but thinks that he'll be able to perform at the world premiere. Oh, and by the way, sounds like a real bummer for the opera singer because, you know, he had his broken nose and he got knocked out and all. But poor squirrel, little guy died. And with far less doping than normal, that's going to do it for the news for the Fredcast for this week. Now, before we get to your listener mail, there's something that I want to talk to you about, and this is going to be a personal appeal, if you will. As I've mentioned on the show several times before, I am very involved with our local MS-150 event. That's the MS-150 Beta Bay Bike Tour. I've told you that the reason I'm involved is because somebody very close to me has the disease. What I haven't told you is that the person that I'm talking about is my wife, Donna. Donna was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis just a little bit more than 4 years ago. And I have to tell you, there's absolutely nothing more heartbreaking than watching your two little girls look up the stairs in the house as their mother, who a few days prior had no problem coming down and making them breakfast, is simply unable to take even one step down the stairs to come not just make them breakfast, but sit with them at breakfast. And It is only through the efforts of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society that people like my wife have been able to partake of some amazing programs and what I call wonder drugs that have allowed them to live otherwise normal lives. I mean, if you met my wife and you looked at her, you'd have no idea that she had multiple sclerosis. And part of that is because of the programs that the Multiple Sclerosis Society provides and the support that they provide and the education for MS patients and their families and caregivers and their children, but also through MS Society supported research that has given us some of these wonder drugs that help keep this devastating disease in check. Now, my wife is lucky. She's lucky because I know plenty of other people who have MS, who have a different form of the MS, which simply becomes a wasting disease where every day brings on new challenges and every day brings on new disabilities. And I know from my work with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society that we are getting closer to a cure, that we're getting closer to finding a way to stop this illness. And this is why I ride in the MS-150 Beta Bay bike tour. I have been very involved from the very first day that Donna's condition was stabilized and she was on the road to recovery from her last relapse of the illness. It's one of the reasons why I became an avid road cyclist. It's probably one of the main reasons I became an avid road cyclist. And I've been very involved in fundraising. I've been a top fundraiser every year, and I've been extremely involved in the planning and execution of the event. This year, I'm the event's planning committee chairman. So the event is coming up October 7th and 8th. And so if every once in a while my podcast is a little late, or if every once in a while my podcast is a little bit short, I think you'll understand that it's because I'm working so hard for Donna and for the hundreds of thousands of other Americans and other people around the world who have multiple sclerosis. This is a disease that attacks people in the prime of their life. Most people end up being diagnosed with this disease somewhere between their teens and their 40s, right in the prime of their life. They get slammed with a very devastating illness and possible disability. So why am I telling you all of this? Well, one, it's because I want your understanding for any issues with the podcast, like this one being just a couple of days late. But also, you know that on this show, I've talked to you about a number of different charities, charity rides, charity events, and I've asked you to support those events. Now I'm asking you to support me, support my family, and support people with multiple sclerosis. I've put a link in the show notes to my page on the MS150BetaBay.com website, where I'm asking you to please go to the website over the next few weeks and donate whatever you can in support of my wife, in support of people with multiple sclerosis, and quite frankly, in support of the Fredcast. You know that there's a lot of ways that I've told you can support this show, whether it's clicking the PayPal donation link on the webpage, whether it's clicking a link from Amazon on the webpage, or Timbuktu, or Performance, or Nashbar, or Google. Those are all ways that you can support the show. And some of you have said, well, I don't like commercials. I don't like the fact that you want to make money off of podcasting. Although of course, the pennies that I make from the Google ad certainly isn't going to make me rich and never will recover the costs that I've incurred in podcasting. But that's not why I podcast. I podcast because I love it, and I podcast because you love it and because of the response that you've given me to it. And now I'm asking you to just respond in a new way. I'm asking you to make a tax-deductible donation to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society by clicking on the link in the show notes, and I'm also going to put one on the webpage in the next few days, and supporting me in my efforts as I ride to support people with multiple sclerosis, and most importantly, and most near and dear to my heart, and to my daughters, Megan and Emily's hearts, in support of their mother and my wife, Donna. So please, go to the show notes, click the link, and give whatever you can so that together we can find a cause and a cure for multiple sclerosis. Thanks for allowing me to take your valuable time with this announcement, and I hope that you will feel like supporting me in this very important and very personal cause. Thanks a lot. Okay, so how about if we get to some listener mail? Here is an email that I got from listener Brian in Ohio, and he said, "Hi, David. In show 28, you posted some links supplied by listener Eric about biking in Ohio, and his links were from the northern part of the state near Cleveland. I'm down in Cincinnati and wanted to send you some links to represent the southern Ohio area. First, I wanted to let you know how lucky Ohio bikers are. As you can see from the Ohio Department of Transportation website, links in the show notes, we have miles and miles of dedicated bike trails. The plan is to have a paved trail from Cincinnati to Cleveland. Take a look at a map, folks. That's a long way. On the Ohio Department of Transportation website, they have a request form for a very nice packet, which includes trail maps, hotel information, and safety information. And this is all completely free. Meanwhile, in southern Ohio, we now boast to have the longest paved trail in America, according to American Trails. The Little Miami Scenic Trail is 76 miles long, and it runs along the Little Miami Scenic River. Not only do we have this trail, but we have 266 miles of paved trails in southwest Ohio alone. Every year, more and more trails are being added. The Miami Trails website contains information and pictures for all of the trails in the Cincinnati and Dayton areas. And one thing that should be pointed out, according to the figures posted on the site, these trails get 175,000 riders who spend an average of $17 per ride, which yields nearly $3 million to the economy. Rails to trails programs work." It's a great email, and I've put links in the show notes. And I just want to remind you why this is here, and thank Brian, of course, for sending it. But the reason that Brian is mentioning this and the reason that listener Eric mentioned it as well was because I was talking about a trip that I took, a business trip, where I rented a bike, and they gave me an amazing cycling map of the area. I had never seen such a complete and such a helpful cycling map. It had everything on it, from the location of convenience stores and gas stations to the location of restrooms and bike shops. It showed which streets were good for cyclists of different abilities. It showed where there were wide shoulders for cycling. It was just really great. And so Eric sent his in about northern Ohio. Now Brian has sent his in about southern Ohio. And of course, I realized that, you know, the Ohio portion of my listeners is probably a small portion, but I'm mentioning it because I want to hear from the rest of you. If you think that where you live, you have great cycling resources, I want to hear about it, because I'm just going to be honest with you. My personal opinion, in the city of Los Angeles, we could really use some help. I have a lot of friends who are down in Orange County, a lot of my friends from the MS-150. We go riding down there. I can't believe the wonderful bike lanes that they have and the buttons that they have for cyclists to push to help let the traffic signal know that you're there so that it will change faster. So I want to hear about other places where you have great cycling resources. So please send me an email. It's thefredcast@gmail.com. And if you're in southern Ohio or you're planning on going to southern Ohio, go to the show notes and click on those links that Brian provided to us. Thanks, Brian. We appreciate it. And speaking of good cycling resources, here's an email that I got from listener Costa in Australia. And the email says, "G'day, mate. I've just started listening to the Fredcast, and I'm just starting out in road cycling. I wanted to inform you of something. I think it was in one of your last podcasts you talk about how in England and in America, you've had some problems with cyclists riding on the road. Here in Australia, at least in New South Wales, it is actually encouraged for cyclists to ride on the road. We cyclists are even given a part of the road, specifically set aside for cyclists. And when coming to traffic lights, this bicycle lane is even painted green to remind the cars of the cyclist's right to be on the road. The lane is even treated with a special paint which increases grip for the cyclist." By the way, I would have loved that in the case of my recent crashes, because I think that would have kept me from having my road rash. Anyway, Costa says, "You can get a little bit of information on this website, and I have put a link in the show notes to that website, because it's amazing what they're doing down there in Australia. So for those of you who may be fighting in your city or in your municipality to get better bike lanes, I think you can probably take this website as a great example of something that could be done in your town, in your city, in your county, to really increase the places where cyclists can ride on the roads. So thanks for that email from Australia. We appreciate that one too. Here's another mail. This is from listener Chris, and Chris is in Ontario, Canada. And Chris says, I listened to your advice about preparing for your first century. And although I haven't done one yet, I listened with great eagerness. Now, I recently ran across an article on overhydration that I should pass on to you, as it gives a warning on some of the advice you gave in your podcast. And here's a quote. Weight gain is a sure sign of too much water, but there are other clues. Feeling bloated, feeling as though you're morphing into the Michelin man, puffiness at the sock line, shorts line, ring band, a headache accentuated by riding on a bumpy road, tight and or shiny skin. Furthermore, it's important to realize that urination frequency and volume do not always give reliable information about hydration status. And by the way, parenthetically, that's important because that's something that I did mention in my series on preparing for your first century. It says, for example, urination can stop while a fluid overload continues to accumulate. In this case, a rider or crew will come to the erroneous and dangerous conclusion that the rider needs to hydrate more. Furthermore, the advice to drink until urine runs clear is erroneous. Now, Chris goes on to say, this is referring to during the ride, and I know part of your, David's, advice was to drink before the ride, which is likely still a good idea. Chris says, I've experienced the Michelin man feeling while riding and, of course, obeyed my body right away and stopped drinking. I had no idea at the time that it could be dangerous. And Chris provided us with a link to the full article, and I think it's definitely worth reading. So head over to the show notes and check it out. That's about it for the listener mail for this show. But I really do appreciate receiving your mail. And at the end of the show, I'm going to tell you how you can send me mail and send me audio comments. So make sure that you listen up for that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Okay, as always, a couple of upcoming rides. The first one is taking place this weekend. It's September the 9th, and this one is up in Oregon. And according to the website, it says, come to the awe-inspiring Southern Oregon coast for a celebration of cycling in one of the world's most beautiful locales. The ride is called the Oregon Coast Cycling Classic. Of course, there are links in the show notes. There are five separate, fully supported routes with many rest stops and checkpoints. You get to ride beside the Pacific Ocean, past cascading waterfalls, across historic bridges, along the Rogue River, and past miles of pristine beaches along the way. Proceeds from this ride go to the Curry Health Foundation. And there's a number of different courses. There's one called the Kitty Ice Cream Outing. It takes you along the beach down to the Port of Gold Beach for an ice cream break and then back to the Curry County Fairgrounds. It's a flat and fun 3-mile ride for all ages, but riders under 10 receive a certificate of accomplishment when they finish. So I think anybody with kids, it's a great ride for them. There's then a 13-mile ride, a 25-mile ride, a 60-mile ride, and a 100-mile century. So check it out. The links are in the show notes. If you're going to be in Southern Oregon this weekend, it's probably going to be a fantastic weekend for riding. Go ahead and check that one out. Next up, September 23rd through the 24th, up in Big Sur, California, is the Big Sur Ride. It's a 170-mile, 2-day event that includes 11,100 feet of climbing. It begins in Carmel Valley, runs along the rugged Big Sur coastline, then through Salinas Valley, and then finally back into the dramatic rolling hills of the Carmel Valley. The proceeds from this ride go to support Trips for Kids, which is a nonprofit organization that brings at-risk youth ages 10 to 17 on day-long cycling trips. And they're taught bike skills, cycling etiquette, and environmental education and stewardship. So not only does it sound like another beautiful ride, another beautiful part of the country, but also it's definitely supporting a very good cause. And of course, there's a link in the show notes to that one as well. Finally, and this one you've got a little bit of time to prepare. This one takes place April 12th through the 15th in 2007. This is Cycle Zydeco. And a listener mentioned this one to me. It sounds like a great event. It's the annual Cajun Creole Food and Cycling Festival featuring the food and music that makes that part of South Louisiana famous. It's a 4-day, 200-mile ride designed to be ridden at a moderate or leisurely pace in order to absorb the Cajun and Creole culture and, of course, the food, plus enjoying the countryside's picturesque postcard views and dancing to toe-tapping Cajun and Zydeco music. That's going to be a fun event. The listener who mentioned it to me, he's going to try to give me some audio from the event, And so we'll look forward to that in April. And of course, there's a link in the show notes, so go ahead and check that out. Finally tonight, just a couple of shout outs. The first is to listener John in Virginia, who just completed his first century. Congratulations, John. It's always a big accomplishment. I'm proud of you. I'm glad you did it. And what's really great for me is John said that he did listen to the How to Complete Your First Century series that I did months and months ago. And I love hearing that. And then I just wanted to send a quick shout out to listener Don in Michigan, who said that when he listens to the Fredcast, he definitely does hammer just a little bit harder. So that's great news. Thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it. All right, that's going to do it for the show. Just a couple of notes before we get to our PodSafe Cycling music. It is a new month, so please do me a favor. Go to Podcast Alley and vote for the Fredcast. We appreciate it. It's just another way that we get a little bit more exposure and we're able to get more listeners. Do me a favor. Continue to spread the words. This week, go ahead and tell three friends who are cyclists about the Fredcast. And if you do that every week, I think our show is going to grow by leaps and bounds, and that's only going to make it better. Finally, I want to tell you how you can contact the Fredcast. Of course, there's a lot of ways to do that. Most easy way for most people is to use email. Our email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, and you can use email for either sending me a text or an audio comment. Of course, there's two other ways that you can set audio comments. The first is to use our listener hotline. That's at area code 206-203-FRED, or you can use the audio link that's in the show notes as well as on the main page. You click that, you use the microphone on your computer, and bam, I get an email in my inbox with your audio comment. It's a great way to send that to me. Of course, you can interact with the other Fredcast listeners on the Fredcast forums as well as on our Frapper map, and links to both of those are in the show notes. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling music comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's music was suggested to me by a Fredcast listener who suggested that if I enjoyed the Black Lab song that I played a couple of weeks ago, I was really going to enjoy this new band called New London Fire. Tonight's song by New London Fire is called Different, and there are links in the show notes to New London Fire's site on the PodShow website as well as to their own website out there on the internet. That's going to do it for tonight. I'll try to be more on time next week with the Fredcast. As always, thank you for staying subscribed. Thank you for your emails, for your comments. Thank you in advance for supporting multiple sclerosis. Enjoy the music, but most of all, until next week, enjoy the ride.
and softly touch your smile. They make their way into the space where the dead air.